All right, let's take our Bibles this evening and open to the book of Habakkuk. If nothing else, tonight you'll learn how to say the name Habakkuk. Or as we, I guess we pronounce it in English, Habakkuk. Habakkuk, that just sounds old, right? Old Western, old time, Habakkuk. Put a twang on that one. All right, we're in the book of Habakkuk. And I hope everybody has the handout. Anybody need one of the handouts? All right, we've got a few that need the handouts, guys. All right, maybe a couple guys helping with that. You might need more than one. All right. We need a few more on this side, Caleb. Don't be stingy. He's like, you can have one. All right, how many of you have found Habakkuk yet? Everybody found Habakkuk? That's really what I'm doing. I'm giving you time to find it. You know, I'm giving you time to find it, all right? All right, keep your hands up if you need the sheet there. Keep your hands up. All right. Habakkuk is a very, very interesting book that I'm really surprised that not more people know about the book of Habakkuk. They may have seen the word or tried to figure out how to pronounce the name or something, but Habakkuk is a very, very unique book. I would say it's probably one of the most unique books in the Minor Prophets because Habakkuk is not, it's not primarily a message from God to the people, which we would think most of the prophets would be, right? They're messages from God to the people. Habakkuk is very unique in that it is actually really, it's a conversation that God gives to us between the prophet Habakkuk and God. It's a conversation that we find here. Instead of really Habakkuk getting something from God and saying, God, what do you want me to tell to Israel? It's a very, again, like I said, it's a very unique book, and I'm surprised that more people don't know more about Habakkuk because I think after we look into this a little bit, I think that you're going to be able to relate to Habakkuk, the book of Habakkuk, probably, just going to say probably more than any other book. And some of you are looking at me like, what are you talking about? Because the book of Habakkuk, again, is not Habakkuk asking God, what do you want me to tell to your people? It's Habakkuk asking God, God, what are you doing? And why are you doing this? Anybody ever asked God that before? Anybody ever asked God, say, God, what are you doing? Why am I going through this? Why do I have to endure this? What is going on? God, why? You ever asked that to God before? I would say probably most of us have asked God that. In one way or another, in one situation or another, we have said, God, why? What is going on? Why are you doing this? That's what Habakkuk is about. It is this conversation between Habakkuk and God. And what we're going to find here is the book of Habakkuk teaches us how to trust God when we don't understand what he's doing. Again, I would say we have all been there. We've all been in situations where we're just, God, I don't understand what you're doing. I'd like to know. I'd like to kind of see what's going on, and God doesn't let us. God doesn't let us see. And Habakkuk teaches us that we can still trust God even though we don't understand what's going on. We don't understand what God is trying to do. So when we come to the book of Habakkuk, again, the theme is trusting God when life doesn't make sense. Now, Habakkuk's not a long book. It's only three chapters. But it is just a very, very unique book. Trusting God when we don't understand what God is doing. Trusting God when I don't know what's going on. Just trusting God when life doesn't make sense. If you think about it, really, I would say the key verse to the book of Habakkuk is in chapter 2 and verse number 4. in chapter 2 and verse number 4, it says, "Behold, his soul which is lifted up is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith." In fact, this phrase here, "the just shall live by his faith," is a very foundational verse in the New Testament. It is quoted both in Romans, it's quoted in Galatians, it's quoted in Hebrews. The just shall live by faith. The just shall live by faith. The just shall live by faith. Come on, the just shall live by faith. What is faith? Faith is saying, I have to trust when I don't know what's happening. Faith is saying, I'm going to trust God when I don't understand what God is doing. This is where we find that phrase that we find in the New Testament quoted several times. We find it here in chapter 2 and verse number 4, where he says, "The just shall live by his faith." Now, a little bit of a historical background here before we get into the structure of the book, but again, Habakkuk is ministering around 609 to 605 BC, okay? This is just before the Babylonian invasion, okay? Just before Babylon invades Judah. And so unlike earlier prophets who are warning of coming judgment, Habakkuk lived just before the judgment actually came. I mean, he was right there, right before it came. And so Habakkuk is ministering during a time of, again, moral decline in Judah. Again, we saw a little bit last week about how Josiah tried to bring revival. He found the book in the temple. He found the word of God in the temple through one of the priests and tried to bring spiritual revival, tried to lead the nation back into revival to God. But again, you can't make people change. That's something that they have to do in their own heart. And so even now, as Josiah has kind of passed off the scene, we find Jehoiakim is now ruling and is a very wicked ruler. And so again, violence, injustice, corruption, these are all widespread things that are taking place in Judah. So again, unlike the other prophets, Habakkuk is not speaking primarily to people as far as a nation is concerned, okay? He's speaking to God about the people. He's having this conversation with God. And so again, during this time in Habakkuk's day, Josiah has died. Jehoiakim, his son, is ruling. He's a very wicked ruler. Idolatry has returned. Judah is full of violence, as we'll see here in a little bit. And Babylon is becoming the dominant world empire at this time. Assyria conquered Israel, the northern kingdom. But now Babylon is becoming the world power, and in just a few short years, Babylon is going to even bring Judah into captivity as well from the judgment of God. So Habakkuk is struggling with two questions that we find here in the book of Habakkuk that we're going to see. The first question is basically, and I'm just kind of summarizing this as we're going to look at this, but the first question that Habakkuk asks God is, God, why aren't you judging evil in Judah? Why aren't you judging evil in Judah? Why aren't you judging the evil? Why are you just letting it go on? And what we're going to find is God's answer is, I am. I am judging it. I am going to judge it, right? But again, God's answer creates then another question for Habakkuk that we're going to see. And really, this question is one that I think that Habakkuk just really could not understand, really could not grasp, is why would you use an even more wicked nation like Babylon to judge your people? I mean, why would you use this wicked nation of Babylon to bring judgment upon your people that you love? Okay? And so when we come to these questions, we're going to find that the book ends with Habakkuk learning that he doesn't have all the answers. Can I tell you something? We don't have all the answers. There's going to be situations and things that we face in life, and we're going to ask God what's going on, and you know what we're going to find out? God doesn't always give us all the answers that we want. And this is where we have to be willing to trust God by faith. We need to trust that God knows what he's doing. Okay, so let's look at the first one here. Let's look at kind of at the structure of the book, the outline here. We find Habakkuk's first complaint. Okay, notice again, verse number one, the burden which Habakkuk the prophet did see. O Lord, so he's talking to the Lord here, right? O Lord, how long shall I cry and thou wilt not hear? Even cry out unto thee of violence and thou wilt not save? Why dost thou show me iniquity and cause me to behold grievance? For spoiling and violence are before me, and there are that rise up strife and contention. Therefore, the law is slacked, and judgment doth never go forth. For the wicked doth compass about the righteous, therefore wrong judgment proceedeth. So here's the first thing that Habakkuk says. God, why aren't you judging this evil here? Why does it seem like evil is becoming predominant in our land? Why does it seem like evil is just running rampant? These are your people. Why are you letting this happen? Okay? And so Habakkuk is saying, God, why don't you do something about the evil that is here? Again, think about what he says here. He talks about violence and thou wilt not save. And he talks about iniquity, the grievances, the spoiling and violence. There are people raising up strife and contention. The law is slack. There's no judgment. There's no righteous judgment here. He's like, God, don't you know what's going on? Don't you see what's happening here in Judah? Why aren't you doing something about this? Again, he's talking about violence. He sees violence and injustice, corruption, oppression, God's people living in sin. And so he questions God and wonders why God seems silent. And again, this is why I say, until I started studying through the book of Habakkuk, I didn't really understand everything about Habakkuk. But I'm like, wow, I think I identify with Habakkuk because so many times I've asked God, God, what are you doing? What are you doing in my life? What are you doing in my country? What are you doing in this person's life? God, what's going on? And this is what Habakkuk is saying. Lord, this is what I see. This is what's going on. He notices that there's problems and violence and wickedness in the land, but God seems to be silent about it. Notice that his problem, Habakkuk's problem, isn't unbelief. He knows God is there and he knows God can do something. His problem is he's confused. He's confused about it. God, why aren't you doing something? I know you can. I know you're righteous. I know who you are. So God, why aren't you doing something? There's a confusion here with Habakkuk. And then we see the second thing. We see God's first answer. Look in verse number 5. Behold ye among the heathen, and regard and wonder marvelously, for I will work a work in your days, which ye shall not believe, though it be told you. For lo, I raise up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation, which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. This is God talking about Babylon like this, right? This is God telling Habakkuk this, okay? They're terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity shall precede themselves. Their horses also are swifter than the leopard and are more fierce than the evening wolves. And their horsemen shall spread themselves and their horsemen shall come from far. They shall fly as the eagle that hasteth to eat. They shall come all for violence. Their faces shall sup up as the east wind, and they shall gather the captivity as the sand, and they shall scoff at the kings, and the princes shall be a scorn unto them. They shall deride every stronghold, for they shall heap dust and take it. Then shall his mind change, and he shall pass over and offend, imputing that his power unto his God. Now, can I say, if Habakkuk was confused before from verses 1 through 4, he's got to even be more confused now. He's like, God, why aren't you doing something? And God says, I am. I'm preparing a horrible, terrible, wicked nation to come and bring judgment. I don't think that was the answer that Habakkuk was looking for. I think Habakkuk was looking for God to be like, Habakkuk, I'm going to do something. I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to make it all right. It's going to be okay. But instead, God answers him with this horrible, wicked, terrible, gruesome nation is going to come. That's God's answer. God says, look, I'm already working. Look what he says in verse 5. Behold ye among the heathen in regard and wonder marvelously, for I will work a work in your day which ye shall not believe though it be told you. God says, I am doing something and I'm gonna do something in the future here that, man, you wouldn't even be able to believe it if I told it to you. And notice he says, this is important. For lo, I raise up the Chaldeans. What'd you say, God? God, you're raising up the Chaldeans? You're raising them up to judge us? God, you're gonna use this wicked, ungodly, horrible, again, these are God's words. They are terrible and dreadful. God, you're raising them up? God, you're allowing them to become this mighty nation. You're allowing them to become this horrible nation, this world power. You're allowing this. God says, I'm allowing this. I will raise up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation. God says, I'm already working, Habakkuk. I'm already working. The work is in progress. You can't see it because it's hundreds of miles away. But he says, I'm already working. I'm raising up a nation that's gonna come and bring judgment upon the very things that you're asking judgment for. You're asking judgment for violence and for wickedness and for idolatry and things. I'm raising it up. I'm raising up a nation that's gonna come and bring judgment. And again, no doubt Habakkuk wonders why God is doing this. The Chaldeans? Instead of bringing revival, God's gonna bring judgment. Instead of rescue, God's bringing the Babylonians that are even more wicked than the Assyrians were. God was working all along, but very differently than Habakkuk expected. And can I say, friend, we may not see what God is doing, but God is always at work. He is always working. And here's the thing. It may not be the way we expect it to be. This was not what Habakkuk expected. God, why aren't you doing something? Why aren't you bringing revival? Why aren't you doing something about this? He didn't expect God to say, I am raising up the Chaldeans for this very purpose. God had been working. So this then creates a bigger question. Remember I said there were two questions that Habakkuk deals with here. This is the first one. But then this brings us to really the second question. Why would God use a more wicked nation, which is what we see in this second complaint? Watch what we see here. Notice verse number 12. Art thou not from everlasting, O Lord my God? Mine Holy One? We shall not die, O Lord. Thou hast ordained them for judgment, and O mighty God, thou hast established them for correction. Thou art purer eyes than to behold evil, and canst not look on iniquity. Wherefore lookest thou upon them that deal treacherously, and holdest thy tongue when the wicked devour the man that is more righteous than he? And makest men as the fishes of the sea, as the creeping things that have no ruler over them. They take up all of them with their angle. They catch them in their net and they gather them in their drag. Therefore they rejoice and are glad. Therefore they sacrifice unto their net and burn incense into their drag, because by them their portion is fat and their meat plenteous. Shall they therefore empty their net and not spare continually to slay the nations? I will stand upon my watch and set me upon the tower and will watch to see what he will say unto me and what I shall answer when I am reproved. So here's Habakkuk's second complaint, right? Because again, now Habakkuk is struggling with God's methods. God says, hey, Habakkuk, I am answering. I am working. I am doing something. But it wasn't quite the way Habakkuk expected it. And now Habakkuk is saying, God, I don't understand. I don't understand. Why would you, again, think about what he says here in verse number 12. Art thou not from everlasting, O Lord my God, mine Holy One? We shall not die, O Lord. Thou hast ordained them for judgment. And O mighty God, thou hast established them for correction. So Habakkuk saying, Lord, you're from everlasting. You're God. You're in charge. You're the Holy One. And then again, it's hard sometimes to read into something, but I almost see Habakkuk trying to change God's mind. Does that make sense? Have you ever tried to change God's mind about something, right? You know, you're asking God for something and it seems like God is saying no, 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 no. And then you're like, well, let me see if I can change God's mind and start giving him all the reasons why he should do what you're asking him to do. You understand? You know what I'm saying? You ever done that before? I'm the only one that's ever done that? Okay. All right. There's a few other people. Okay, good. Yeah. It's like, God, I'm not really content with your answer. So let me see if I can change your mind. Look what it does. Thou art of purer eyes than to behold evil, and canst not look on iniquity. Wherefore lookest thou upon them that deal treacherously, and holdest thy tongue when the wicked devoureth the man that is more righteous than he? God, you're so holy, you're so pure, you're so righteous. I mean, surely, God, surely you couldn't use someone wicked. Right, God? Surely you wouldn't use this treacherous nation for those who are more righteous than they. Surely you're not going to do that, God, right? You ever tried to change God's mind? I think we have. So again, Habakkuk is just struggling with the answer that God gave him about the method that God is using. He essentially says, look, I understand judging Judah. I understand judging sin, but Babylon is worse than Judah. Babylon is more wicked. I mean, there's not even any, he talks about he uses the illustration of fishing. I don't know if you caught that. He says in verse 15, they take up all them that the angle, they catch them in their net, they gather them in their drag, right? He's talking about fishing, right? And then what does he say in verse number 16? Therefore, they sacrifice unto their net and burn incense under their drag. What's he saying? It's like they're worshiping their nets. They're worshiping the tools that they're using for fishing, right? They're offering sacrifices to the nets, thinking that by offering sacrifices to the nets, somehow the nets are going to catch more fish. They're offering incense. They're burning incense to the drags. They're burning incense to the nets. That's pretty idolatrous. Wouldn't you say? When you start sacrificing to the nets that you're going to throw out into the water to bring in fish, thinking that somehow the nets have a say in what gets caught in them. Like the nets, okay, the nets get thrown out. The nets are down there. You know, they didn't offer any sacrifices to us today. We're just not going to let any fish get in. But he says that's what they're doing. So, God, surely, God, you're not going to use them to bring judgment upon Judah. I mean, think about how idolatrous they are. They don't recognize you, God. I mean, they're offering sacrifices to their nets. They're burning incense to the drags. God, there's no way that you would use them. You see how there's some kind of confusion with Habakkuk, and now he's trying to talk God out of what God said? So again, we think if we look at Habakkuk's attitude here, again, rather than just accepting what God says, notice what he does. He says in chapter 2, verse 1, I will stand upon my watch and set me upon the tower and will watch to see what he will say unto me and what I shall answer when I am reproved. So rather than walk away, Habakkuk says he's going to climb into the watchtower to wait for God's answer. Now again, most likely it seems, just from the little that we understand or know a little bit about Habakkuk, maybe he was a watchman that would be on the wall, right? That would be watching for enemies that would come. And so Habakkuk says, I'm going to wait for God to answer me because I really don't think I heard God right the first time. I don't think that was really what God was saying the first time. So I'm going to go back to my job. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. I'm going to get back up into my watchtower. I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do, and I'm going to wait for God's answer. And so God gives the second answer. Verse number 2, and the Lord answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain upon the tables that he may he may run that readeth it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak and not lie. Though it tarry, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry. Behold, his soul which is lifted up is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith. So here is God's second answer. We don't have time to read the whole of chapter number 2. The chapter 2 is basically God's answer to Habakkuk. And this really, chapter 2, is the heart of the book. Because God gives several key truths here. Again, God is the one that gives the principle of faith. The just shall live by his faith. God is answering Habakkuk. God is saying, the just shall live by his faith. The righteous don't live by explanation. God says, Habakkuk, I don't have to explain everything to everyone. I am God. And so Habakkuk, what I'm asking you is just to trust me. Again, sometimes we can think because we're a child of God, or we're a Christian, sometimes that we think that God should give us more information. Well, God, you give me a little bit more and then maybe I'll obey. Give me a little bit more and then here's what God is saying. The just shall live by his faith. Habakkuk, I don't have to explain everything to you. In fact, Habakkuk, I don't have to explain anything to you. And by the way, friend, do you know that God does not have to explain anything to us? He is God. He is just, he is righteous. But here's what he does say. He says, the just shall live by his faith. So he says, if you are just, if you are righteous before God, then here's what God expects us to do. Live by your faith. To live by your faith. To follow God, not having to have everything explained to us, because again, can I say, if we have everything explained to us, we're not living by faith, we're living by sight. God says, the just shall live by faith, not by sight. So we've got to be willing to trust God even when we cannot see or cannot understand. Of course, we see the fall of the wicked. God tells Habakkuk that Babylon will not escape judgment either. In fact, there are five woes that God gives here in the book of Habakkuk in chapter 2. These five woes are pronounced against Babylon. Notice in verse number 6, he says, shall not all these that take up a parable against him and a taunting proverb against him and say, woe to him that increaseth that which is not his. How long? And to him that ladeth himself with the thick clay, shall not they rise up suddenly that shall bite thee and awake that shall vex thee, and thou shalt be for booty unto them, because thou hast spoiled many nations. All the remnant of the people shall spoil thee because of men's blood and for the violence of the land of the city and all that dwell therein. So God begins to pronounce judgment upon Babylon as well. So God says, I'm going to use Babylon to bring judgment upon Israel, but that does not free Babylon of their responsibility to God. That doesn't free Babylon. Again, as we saw last week, God is the God of all nations. It doesn't matter whether they recognize him as God or not. He is the God of all nations. And just as Judah is responsible to God, and God is going to bring judgment upon Judah for their sin, so Babylon is responsible before God, and God will bring judgment upon Babylon. All nations are responsible to God. Whether they accept him as God or not, every nation is responsible. And so we see the first woe is about Babylon's greed. They're greedy, they're taking. In verses 9 through 11, we see their covetousness. Woe to him that coveteth an evil covetousness to his house, that he may set his nest on high, that he may be delivered from the power of evil. So we see greed, we see covetousness. In verses 12 to 14, we see violence. He says, woe to him that buildeth a town with blood and establisheth a city by iniquity. Behold, is it not of the Lord and of the host that the people shall labor in the very fire and the people shall weary themselves for very vanity? So there's violence here. Babylon was a wicked, terrible nation. And he talked about that. Their horses are like leopards. They're so swift and bring such destruction. So there's woe unto the violence. There's also woe, we see in verses 15 through 17, for drunkenness and shame. He says, woe unto him that giveth his neighbor drink, that putteth thy bottle to him and maketh him drunken also, that thou mayest look on their nakedness. Thou art filled with shame for thy for glory. Drink thou also and let thy foreskin be uncovered. The cup of the Lord's right hand shall be turned unto thee, and shameful spewing shall be on thy glory. So he's talking about their just wickedness, their drunkenness, their shame in it. And God says, I'm going to bring judgment upon you. This is one of the reasons, God says. And then we see, lastly, the fifth woe is idolatry in verses 18 through 20. He said, what profiteth the graven image that the maker thereof hath graven it? Isn't that interesting? He says, what profit hath the graven image that the maker had to grave it? In other words, what he's saying is, what profit does this pulpit have when someone had to make this pulpit? And yet we call it a god. That would be kind of foolish to call this pulpit a god, knowing that there was a man that had to make this pulpit. There was a man that had to take measurements, and they had to cut the wood, and they had to glue the wood and paint it and all this. There was someone, there was a maker that made this pulpit. For us to call this pulpit a god, be kind of foolish. This is what God is saying. Woe unto him that, woe, what profit the graven image that the maker thereof hath graven it, the molten image and a teacher of lies that the maker of his work trusted therein to make, I love this, dumb idols. Now, again, the word dumb there is not referring to the way we use dumb today. It's not saying they're stupid. It's not what he's saying. He's saying they're dumb. It means they can't hear. In other words, they're praying to this idol, but guess what? This idol doesn't hear. This idol doesn't hear, it doesn't speak, doesn't do anything. Why? Because it is a creation, it has been made. It's something that somebody has made. And this is what he's saying. Woe unto him that saith to the wood, awake, to the dumb stone, arise, it shall teach. Behold, it is laid over with gold and silver, and there is no breath at all in the midst of it. He says, this is ridiculous, but yet these people, they will overlay an image with gold. They're overlay it with silver. There's no breath in it. They don't have, they cannot hear, they cannot speak, but yet they will say, this is our God. And they will pray to that, and they will sacrifice to it, and they will worship it, and it does absolutely nothing. Idolatry. And so this is what he's saying here. He's saying this idolatrousness is going to be judged by God. And then in verse number 20, we see God's sovereignty in it all. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. Hey, God's in control. It doesn't matter how many gods people make. It doesn't matter how many images people make and say this is a god or whatever. God is in his holy temple. God is in control. God is sovereign. He knows what's going on, and we can trust him. Even though we may not understand what God is doing, we can trust him. And that brings us to the fifth thing here of chapter 3, Habakkuk's prayer and praise. Habakkuk's prayer and praise. So Habakkuk shifts now from questioning God to worshiping God. That's where we ought to be. Instead of questioning God, we ought to be worshiping God. Again, that doesn't mean we're going to have all the answers, right? That doesn't mean we're gonna know everything that God is doing and how God's gonna do it and why God's gonna do it and when God's gonna do it. We don't have all the answers. But we know that God is in control. And so we can trust him. And this is what we find. He says, a prayer of Habakkuk, the prophet of Shigionoth. O Lord, I have heard thy speech and was afraid. O Lord, revive thy work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make known. In wrath, remember mercy. He says, all right, Lord, I'm going to trust you, and I know judgment's coming. But Lord, I'm asking in wrath, would you remember mercy? Even though through the judgment, Lord, would you remember that we are your people? Even though you're going to use Babylon, and Lord, I don't understand why you're going to use Babylon, but would you remember mercy? Would you remember that we belong to you? And so the entire chapter really is a song. Habakkuk remembers God's power in verses 1 through 15. He just kind of reflects on God's past mighty works. Again, we don't have time to look at it all, but he just kind of goes back and just kind of begins to look at all the things that God has done. And you can read that all the way down through verse number 15 there. And then he starts reflecting and remembering God's faithfulness. Look in verse 16. When I heard, my belly trembled, my lips quivered at the voice. Rottenness entered into my bones, and I trembled in myself, that I might rest in the day of trouble. When he cometh unto the people, he will invade them with his troops. Although the fig tree shall not blossom, neither shall fruit be in the vines, the labor of the olive shall fail, and the field shall yield no meat. The flock shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no herd in the stalls. So think about this. He's saying there's judgments coming, and all of this is going to happen. But watch what he says in verse 18. Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. Hey, Habakkuk understood God was going to bring judgment, and he understood it was going to be severe. It was going to be severe judgment upon Judah. I mean, he talks about it. The fig tree not blossoming, the vines not giving any fruit. I mean, all of this, all of these things, there's going to be no herds in the stalls. I mean, it's total devastation. It's total destruction. And yet he says, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. What happened? Or maybe I could say, what changed? Did his circumstances change? Did God change his mind about judgment? Did God be like, oh, Habakkuk, you're right. I am the Holy One. And you know what? Yeah, you know, you are my people. You know what? I think you're right. I think I'll change. And I'm not going to judge Judah anymore. I'm not going to use Babylon. Did his circumstances change? Habakkuk's circumstances didn't change. Israel or Judah's circumstances didn't change. God said, there is judgment coming, and it is just around the corner. So what changed? It wasn't his circumstances. It was Habakkuk. Habakkuk changed. He went from questioning God and not understanding everything to worshiping God and trusting him without having to understand everything. Can I tell you something? When we just question and question and question and question, can I tell you something? We're not worshiping God. We're not trusting him. We're not putting our faith in him because we're questioning. God, I don't understand. God, why are you doing this? God, why? God, why? And what God desires, and this is what God told Habakkuk, the just shall live by his faith. And so when we come to the end of Habakkuk, what we find is Habakkuk's circumstances have not changed. Habakkuk had changed. Habakkuk understood, I simply need to trust God. I need to trust him. Even though I don't understand what God is doing, and I don't understand why God is doing it this way, but I don't have to. All I have to do is trust God. Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength. And he will make my feet like hinds' feet, and he will make me to walk upon high places to the chief singers on my stringed instruments. This is a song that he's singing. He sang this song, and he's saying, look, I get it now. Faith is not based on circumstance. Faith is based upon the very character of God himself. Because I know who God is, I can trust him. And I don't have to have all the answers. And I know that's hard for us. It's hard for us not to have all. We want to know. We want the answers. God, why are you doing this? God, why did you let this happen? God, what are you trying to do? What is going on here? And sometimes God says, you're just going to have to trust me. Because I'm not going to give you the answer. I'm not going to give you the answer. You're going to have to trust me. Circumstances won't change. The question is, will we? Will we change and learn to trust him and worship him, know who he is, and be able to say, like Habakkuk, I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. Now, there's some major themes here in the book. They're there for you. God's sovereignty. God rules over Judah and Babylon and kings and nations. Nothing is outside of his control. Again, every nation stands before God. We know God tells us one day, every knee will bow and every tongue confess. By the way, that includes every nation. Every nation, every knee, every tongue. You see, we're all accountable to God. Doesn't matter if the nation believes in God or not. Every nation is accountable to God because he is God. We also see God's timing. Habakkuk wanted immediate action, but it wasn't on God's timetable that way. God has a timetable. God has a plan in what he is doing. And what we have to do is understand God is never late and God is never early. He is always on time. Sometimes we might think he's late. God, I really needed this. Why didn't you do it when I needed it? It's not that God's late. It's just we're wanting it too early. God, why didn't you do this? No, God is never late. Habakkuk, in verse number 2, though it tarry, God says, wait for it. It may not come on your timetable, but God says, I have an answer. You're just going to have to wait for it. You're going to have to wait for it. How long did Israel have to wait for the answer of the coming Messiah? How long did the world have to wait for the answer of the coming deliverer? How long has the church waited for the coming and return of Jesus Christ? You think about it. Even in Paul's day and Peter's day, no doubt they anticipated the Lord returning any time. No doubt people can look today and say, well, why hasn't God returned? God says, oh, the answer is there. You just need to wait for it. It's going to be on God's timetable, not man's. And faith. Faith is the major theme. We don't always understand God's ways, but faith means trusting God, even when life doesn't make sense. There's a lot about life that doesn't make sense, isn't there? We still have to trust God. Even when prayer seems unanswered. How many times we prayed about something, we're like, God, are you there? Are you listening? Yeah, he is. We have to trust him. Even when evil appears to win, and I would say we can look around, and we can say, man, it just seems like evil and wickedness is just getting more and more and more, and it seems like it's winning. Well, it's okay. God's still in control. And by the way, we have the end of the book too. We know who wins. Even when God's plans are hidden to us, we still have to trust him. And we need to worship even during difficult times. Because true joy isn't based on circumstances, it's rooted in God himself. Habakkuk teaches us worship before deliverance, not just after deliverance. We should worship before. We should worship all the time, even when the circumstances may seem hard. Difficult, we should still worship God. And then, of course, we see Christ in the book. I'm not going to go through these a lot. I know our time is gone, but we see Christ in the book. Jesus is the just one. Habakkuk says, the just shall live by his faith. And ultimately, Christ is the perfect, righteous, just one. And through faith in him, we are able to be justified because he is just. Jesus bears God's judgment for us. Habakkuk centers on judgment. And instead of believers receiving judgment, Christ took our judgment on the cross. Jesus is the coming king. Habakkuk speaks of God's coming glory in chapter 3. And of course, the New Testament reveals Christ returning in power and majesty and glory and setting up his kingdom on the earth as well. Jesus is the hope during trouble. Again, Habakkuk rejoices before circumstances change. Remember what Paul said in a Roman prison when he wrote to the church of Philippi? Rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. His circumstance didn't change. He was still in jail. But he says, no matter where I am, I can still rejoice. I can still joy in my God. He's the hope during trouble. And Jesus fulfills Habakkuk 2:14, for the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Again, we know ultimately in the millennial reign of Jesus Christ, people will come from all over, that the whole earth will come to hear the Lord Jesus Christ. Just a couple closing things here. The book begins with a prophet standing in confusion. Habakkuk, Lord, I don't understand. Same thing that many of us, God, I don't understand what you're doing. But it ends with a prophet standing in confidence. I can trust my God. I can trust him. My circumstance hasn't changed, but I know who my God is, and I know he's in control, and I can trust him. He starts by saying, why, Lord? And he finished by saying, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. The Lord God is my strength. And I would say that is the journey of every believer. We often begin with questions, but as we get to come to know God more and more and more and see his character and see who he is, our questions are transformed into trust. And Habakkuk teaches that while we may not always understand God's plan, we can always trust God's person, because the just are called to live by their faith. Isn't that good? I hope that the next time you look at Habakkuk, you will see it very, very different and be able to say, boy, you know what? I can relate to Habakkuk here. So many times we question God. The circumstance didn't change. He changed. So Lord, I can trust you. Aren't you glad we can trust a God who hears, who cares, who loves? And even though we don't understand, we can trust him that he is in control. Father, I pray that you'd help us. Lord, thank you for your word. Thank you for the book of Habakkuk. And Lord, just how it relates to us today. Lord, so many times we question, we don't understand why. We don't know what you're doing. We don't understand why you're doing it a certain way, because no doubt our way is probably much better, or so we think. Lord, it's so many times it is hard to just trust you when we don't see what your plans are. Lord, that's what faith is. Being willing to trust you, not knowing what it is that you're going to do, not knowing when you're going to do it. So, Father, I pray that you would help us, Lord, as we think about Habakkuk tonight, to recognize ourselves in this book and say, Lord, would you help me, like Habakkuk, to simply be willing to trust you and to be able to rejoice in the God of my salvation, to know that no matter what's going on, even if judgment is coming, Lord, I can rejoice in you and I can still continue to trust you, knowing that you are in control and your way is always best. Lord, would you help us? We need to look to you. We need, as the just, as righteous, as children of God, we need to live by our faith in Jesus Christ. Father, help us with this. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.